Well, anyone in South Africa who's interested in politics was glued to the television screen for at least 44 minutes yesterday as Cyril Ramaphosa was hosted, along with a group of South Africans, by the US President Donald Trump in the Oval Office. For his assessment, we will find out from BizNews's favorite columnist, political analyst, and scientist, and academic, Paul Johnson. I made the mistake a little earlier of talking with somebody who had not watched the conversation live. Bill, did you watch it last night? Were you glued to the television screen?
Yes, it was a bit like watching an argument in a kindergarten, but, very low level in a way. But anyway, I did watch.
And your assessment?
Well, I think Ramaphosa got away lightly, really. Had Trump decided to focus on our contacts with Hamas and Hezbollah, that would have been very awkward. And to explain why our foreign minister phoned them up shortly after October the 7th, and why she went off to Iran and so on, it would have been very, very awkward. And I think it would also have been very awkward to explain why they put well over 100 new racial laws on the statute books into getting to power. And that it is, but I mean, Musk's complaint is largely true. Had he indeed been a black South African, I'm certain that they wouldn't have made any difficulties about Starlink. But none of those things came up. It was all about white farmers. And, Trump has got the wrong end of the stick there in some regards, but he nonetheless, I thought, made some strong points because, you know, he was able to show this field of crosses of dead farmers, and Ramaphosa, in his typical "I am shocked" voice, said, "Oh, I've never seen that," which I don't think is a good thing for a president of a country to say. It's his country. He should have known about things like that. And, of course, playing the recording of Malema chanting, demanding kill the farmer, etc. It's very weak to say he's just an opposition party. I mean, Trump quite rightly said, good heavens, why do you allow someone to keep demanding death for people who are being killed in such numbers? And it's shocking, and we wouldn't allow that. Now, there's no good answer to that. Of course it shouldn't be allowed. And, the Constitutional Court has let us all down by okaying it. But all things considered, that was relatively easy for the South African delegation to deal with. And they just talked about criminality, etc. And Ramaphosa kept fairly cool, which was good. And I think that they will feel they got away much less scathed than they might have, frankly. Though I don't think they performed particularly strongly. And, for example, John Steenhuisen not only seemed very nervous, but he several times referred to the union buildings, which an American audience would think must be about the trade union. Nobody outside South Africa knows what the union buildings are. And he also talks about the justice cluster. Now, that is complete gobbledygook for an American audience. He really wasn't thinking who he was talking to. That's for parochial South African consumption. But he just hadn't thought about what he was doing. But I think, as I say, they got away with it considering what might have happened.
But surely it's an opportunity lost then if they, if Trump wasn't on his top form or indeed wasn't in attack dog mode as some had feared.
Well, look, it was difficult because all that Trump wanted to deal with was about dead Afrikaner farmers being killed. He didn't even talk about the fact that 20% of them get tortured before they're killed, which is shocking. and shows that the large element of racial hatred in the whole thing. You know, Trump's level of information is not that high. But nonetheless, you know, he did score some points, even on that ground. But of course, what we don't know, and what is far more important than that sort of debating thing, is whether or not, as a result of this visit, they now have meetings with the Commerce Department or the State Department in which they actually make some progress on commercial questions, talking about AGOA and its equivalents and so on. That we simply don't know about, though I assume that while they're in Washington, they will try to do that. Clearly, Trump
He didn't want to go there and on any of those issues. But what was also interesting for an outside observer was that the South African delegation, it was almost spread around. They all had an opportunity to speak. Well, not the cabinet ministers, the ANC cabinet ministers, but everybody else, from the golfers to Johann Rupert, to the trade union leader, whereas Trump did not do that from his side. Observing from your position of insight, why would that have been?
Well, Marco Rubio was somewhere else, I think, and I think he would have been quite difficult for the South Africans because he's quite well informed and he would have had a much wider range of questions to ask, I think. And there was no sign of Vance, so as usual, it's the Donald Trump show, you know. He loves attention. He likes being, every diplomatic visit is a chance for him to sit there and opine in front of the cameras. And that's what he likes. But it's very low level stuff, really.
For a domestic audience in the United States, presumably.
Yes. And you see, if you think about it, Ramaphosa represents a whole series of things that Trump doesn't like. Anti-white preferences in BEE, and therefore, affirmative action, and anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, contacts with Iran. All of these things are absolute dynamite in the American context. And, if you think about and Ramaphosa as a black man representing all of that, in terms of Trump and his MAGA sort of true believers, there is no way that Ramaphosa can be allowed to win such a confrontation. Trump has to emerge the winner. Because Ramaphosa actually represents so many things that he doesn't like. Now, given that, as I say, it was much milder than it might have been.
What might have happened behind closed doors, though? I've heard it being suggested that this was really setting up the stage for the next discussion, which was where the really serious engagement would happen when they were out of the public eye.
Well, it's possible, but that wouldn't be with Trump because, you know, Trump is not interested in discussing the details of commercial deals. Somebody else has to deal with that, Besant or someone else. But so he's doing broad brush and he's performing essentially for an American audience. He's not really interested in who else is watching. So that I think that, you know, whether or not the South African delegation is now able to get audiences with the Commerce Department and the State Department. I think I'd leave the trade representative out since he is a crazy guy. They might be able to make some progress. After all, they will have ended off in a reasonably amicable state with Trump, which is about as good as they could have hoped for. And that gives them a sort of green light for the rest of the Republican administration. But I don't know. We'll have to wait and see when they get back whether they have got any further.
What did you think of the contribution from Johann Rupert, who was a surprise to many within the ANC here in South Africa, that he was in the Oval Office in the first place?
Well, he apparently played quite a role in getting the whole interview set up. And, I think that it was a studied point that Ramaphosa was pushing forward white members of his delegation, the golfers, Steenhuisen and Rupert, as an implicit way of saying, here are you, you see some perfectly okay whites who are happy to be in South Africa and don't believe everything you've been told. And, you know, as you would expect, Rupert was pretty much on the nail. He knew what he wanted to say, and he wasn't, he didn't make the sort of mistakes that Steenhuisen did. And yeah, he gave quite a strong performance, I thought.
And the golfers, they certainly came across as pretty authentic from where I'm sitting.
I'm sure they're completely authentic, and what they said was very heartfelt. But of course, they're there because Trump likes golf. That's all, really. And, you know, because a lot of sporty Americans will have heard of them and remembered that both of them have won major tournaments. But they're both rather has-beens in golfing terms now. But nonetheless, you know, in the peculiar world of Donald Trump, they count. So it wasn't a bad thing to do. It's very peculiar sort of politics, this, where you're bringing along two rather older golfers to a meeting to discuss, as it were, foreign policy and so on, you know. But there we are.
And that's the point that I'd like you just to share and explain to us. Often in the past, it was called diplomacy because people were diplomatic to each other. There didn't seem to be a heck of a lot of diplomacy going on there. Trump over speaking Ramaphosa, Ramaphosa jumping in when Trump was speaking. It was a really strange type of environment, very transparent, which I guess the public like. But is this something that actually adds value to a relationship between the two nations? Because that's at the end of the day what it should be all about.
I think this is all very superficial stuff. But look, we saw what happened with Zelensky. It would have been only too possible for the same or worse to happen with Ramaphosa. And it didn't happen. And Ramaphosa kept his cool and was courteous. And I think he performed perfectly okay. And so they got through it all right, you know. But it obviously doesn't deal with any of the real questions, which are about the issues which I've mentioned on the way. I mean, somewhere, if they want to progress this relationship, they've got to sit down and talk about a whole lot of things, relations with Iran, with Hamas, with Hezbollah, about the case against Israel, about expropriation and where that leaves any foreign investor, etc., etc. And also, you know, if you look at, for example, the rules that Guido Mantashe has just brought in for anyone who wants to invest in oil and gas, they amount to say, why on earth would you bother investing here? Because they're so onerous that no one in their right mind would want to invest under those conditions, and I'm sure nobody will. So it's not much point suggesting to the Americans that they might like to come and drill for gas or oil in South African waters. If those are the terms, they just laugh at you. And to be frank, I think the same is really rather true about this notion of Starlink and equity equivalence. There's been a lot of talk about this, as if this is some wonderful way to sort of square the circle. But look, every other country in Africa is signing up for Starlink as a commercial proposition. South Africa alone seems to have special conditions so that if you don't have to give away 30% of your equity to BEE, you have to do the equivalent by giving all sorts of training programs and this, that, and the other special conditions of every sort. You know, if I were Elon Musk, I'd say, look, do you want to buy or do you not? It's like, you know, if you want to buy a new Mercedes, you either pay the price and get the thing or you don't. But you don't agree or be forced to agree that you'll do all sorts of training programs for learner drivers or anything like that. I mean, you know, it's a commercial proposition. And other countries in Africa have found that quite sufficiently interesting to go ahead. So are we going to be the only one asking for all these special conditions? If I were Musk, I'd laugh at that.
But that really comes back to my area where I've worked for so long, and this was a commercial opportunity. You don't get into the White House too often. In fact, probably never again. And here you could make a case for investment. You could change to have an appealing investment proposition, but you did none of that. You instead asked to help with help for technology to solve an out-of-control crime problem. I was quite disappointed when looking at it from a pure economic lens.
Well, the problem is that I don't think Trump wanted to talk about commercial propositions, except in the most broad brush way, because he wouldn't deal with that. If you really wanted to get ExxonMobil to come and drill for oil and gas, then, you know, you're going to have really serious discussions with them, and you're going to have to drop a lot of your special conditions. But that's not going to happen in the White House. So I don't blame the South Africans for that. The question is, as I say, will they be able to go on from that meeting to have other meetings with the State Department, Commerce Department, etc., because that might be much more fruitful.
You've written a lot, Bill, recently about South Africa basically losing all its friends. In the Middle East, it's left with Iran. China has done a separate deal with the United States. India is very close to the United States. Russia seems to be absent as far as any support is concerned here. Did that play much of a role? Because going into the year, Ramaphosa would have been feeling his oats as the president of the G20, which has been, I suppose, pushed quite aggressively here in South Africa, whereas now he was coming perhaps from a different perspective and maybe realizes America can be a good friend.
Sorry, I didn't hear all that very well. You're rather indistinct at my end. I think that it is true that South Africa is more isolated than it used to be, or that it needed to be. The trouble is, you see, that, I mean, BRICS doesn't really work as a solidary grouping. It's already obvious, you will have seen, that they nominated South Africa for a possible permanent position on the Security Council, and immediately Egypt and Ethiopia objected, and it's therefore had to be dropped as an idea. Now, that suggests to me that there's been a failure in South African diplomacy. I mean, you know, at the very least, they should have been talking to the Ethiopians and Egyptians and squaring them before this came up, but they obviously didn't do that work. And it's very noticeable that in the whole fuss that we've had in American-South African relations over the past year or so, that nobody for BRICS has spoken in South Africa's defense. I mean, nobody's interested in that. It just doesn't seem to happen at all. And, if you think of it, we have very strong relations with the EU. We have strong relations with the British. And we've had pretty good relations with a number of other countries and so on. But we have really made the most of those. We've been offending. I mean, if you talk to European ambassadors, they're a much more sophisticated lot than Trump. But they fully understand what's going on. And when I've spoken to some of the EU ambassadors, I mean, they're pretty contemptuous of a lot of the South African initiatives and feel that they're being taken for a ride, that South Africa's really anti-Western and so on, you know. So they debate with themselves whether they should be taking a harder line. Now, that's a failure from South Africa's point of view. We've basically been taking far too much for granted. We could and should have made far more of the Commonwealth connection, of the EU as our historic biggest investor and trading partner before China came on the scene, and so on. And this hasn't been done. the fact that there was several years without an ambassador, even in Washington, shows how poorly the whole system is working. I mean, that's your most important foreign posting, and you leave it empty. For God's sake, I mean, this is really incompetent.
So the president of South Africa apparently picks up the phone and asks for a meeting. He then has a meeting where he's positioning it as resetting the relationship with the United States. Has any of that been achieved?
Well, as I say, we won't really know until we find out whether or not there's any substantive improvement in any other aspect of our relations, because I'm sure that, you know, Trump will have moved on to the next thing. He's got a very short attention span anyway. You know, this was all for the cameras yesterday. It really does depend whether they're in Washington now, whether they're all there, whether they can make any further contacts, have any further meetings, and make any progress. And we won't know that until they come back and tell us.
R.W. Johnson is a political analyst and the favorite columnist of BizNews Premium, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.